listener production.
Okay, are you recording? Are you recording?
Welcome along to episode 27 of the Howie Games Artist Series Part A, starring a TV star, a movie star, a stand-up comic, and plenty more. We present to you Mr. Jeremy Piven.
You're fired, and in case your ears are fucked, get the fuck out! And the next person I see juggling, tap dancing, or baton twirling, or doing any other circus-like tricks will join him, all right? One strike policy applies. Now get back to work! God damn, that felt good.
Yeah, so when you get a guest on the show who was the star of your favourite TV show of all time, that would be the part of Ari Gold in Entourage who you just heard, well, equal favourite TV show of all time alongside Seinfeld, that makes for a pretty good day. When that guest is warm, engaging and generous with his time and thoughts as Jeremy was, that is an even better day. This is a man who has starred in countless movies, a couple of my favourites, Black Hawk Down.
Federal regulations has designated this a non-smoking Black Hawk, helicopter.
Rock and Roller, now there is a film.
I joked a lot funnier when I told you last week. Can I have a word with you, Cookie?
He has won Emmys, he's won a Grammy, he has done it all. And the good news for you, you can see Jeremy, I'll rephrase that, you should see Jeremy, in his stand-up show in Melbourne, Tuesday, April 2, 8pm at the Palais, then April 4 in Sydney at the very fancy State Theatre, again 8pm. Jump on Ticketmaster or click the link on the show notes, bang, away you go. This chat did come about rather unexpectedly and very quickly. Still can't really believe it, but hey, here we are. Thanks to Tommy, the amazing Josie Gagliano from Roho Consulting, and our man from Triple M Adelaide, Jared Nerlich, for getting the technical side up and running. Let's get to it with Jeremy Piven, a man of many talents. Well, this is outstanding, the Howie Games Artist Series. This man, a stack of awards in Hollywood, Emmys, Golden Globes, hit shows, 50-plus movies, stand-up comedian. He's beaming in from Adelaide, which I'll be interested in his thoughts in a moment. His name is Jeremy Piven. Jeremy, or as we would call you in Australia, Jezza, welcome to the Howie Games Artist Series. How are you going?
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure to be here. I've never been to Australia, but and I've been wanting to come for a long time, so it's an honor.
What are your initial thoughts and impressions of this beautiful country we're lucky enough to live in?
You know, I'm not a fan. I got to be honest with you. the coffee is shit, and the people are, it's awkward. It's just very awkward. No, and I'm not just saying this. It's very interesting. It feels like people are very genuine, and they have, you know, people are opinionated and they have good taste. It's very interesting. It's like you can get random people coming up to you for strange reasons, but people have like very specific movies they've seen or whatever. And I really like their taste. And people, like, for instance, the fact that you guys don't have Starbucks here is, you know, a testament to you guys that you just don't want, you know, burnt, overpriced, viciously mediocre coffee in this country. And I love that.
And when people are coming up to you on the street, we'll get to your career shortly, but how often do you get the Lloyd call?
Lloyd! 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 You're sorry, Lloyd? You have no idea how sorry you're going to be. I am going to destroy you. I am going to erode every fiber of your spirit.
We had Eric Banner on this show, and I know you've been in a movie with him, Black Hawk Down, which I want to talk to you about. And he was talking, he was in a very famous movie called Chopper, which was an Australian criminal film.
I saw it.
So what do you get the most from everything you've done over 30 or 40 years in the industry? What line?
Let's hug it out, bitch.
You want to hug it out?
No, not really.
Let's hug it out, bitch.
You know, I get a lot of Lloyd, you
so,
know.
Sorry to jump in, but, mate, I love this stuff. I absolutely love it. Is that the role that people connect with the most? Like, you've done 40-odd movies at that point, but is Entourage the role? Is Ari the role that really stuck?
Yeah, so people, you know, they address me as Ari, and what's interesting is that I won the Fresh Face of the Year when I was 37 years old, and I said, there's nothing fresh about my face, but thank you. And, you know, I was acting for 30 years before I broke through. And, you know, you deal with guys in the sports lane. And, you know, the year I broke through is, you know, you're lucky if you are still playing at 37 years old. So, you just have to be just kind of very tenacious. And I just had that belief that if I kept going, a role would open up where I'm allowed to do what I was trained to do.
Yes.
Which I think equates very much with sports. It's just, you know, acting and that lane isn't in a weird way as fair as sports. Because one of the cool things about that I love about sports is no matter what happens to you, no matter what anyone's opinion of you is, you know, you do have that chance to right the wrongs and you have that moment. And that's all I've ever wanted.
But when you're going through that, Jeremy, do you always continue to believe that there's something there? Do you still believe that the role is going to come to you?
So with me, it's just about give me that shot. And, you know, I've never phoned it in, taken a dive, you know, to a fault where I've taken projects where I thought, you know, wow, the writing's not really there and it's a first time director and, you know, but I'm gonna do everything I can. I'm gonna try to elevate, and you know, you have to be careful of that because you know a guy in a position of power said to me one time. He said, "You have to stop being the best things in really bad movies." And you know, at first, you know, it's one of those backhanded compliments, but you know, being patient, because I love to work, but being patient and finding the right project will serve you. And yet for me, it's just like sports where the variable is getting your reps in and just doing it. And so that you're ready when you get your shot.
I love how many crossovers there are between the artist series and the sport we've had. I want to ask you about a day you had in Melbourne, but it's funny that I'm privileged enough to be a sports announcer, as you call them, for a sport called cricket and our local football, AFL football. And there's a guy that plays for the team I go for, and his name is Lloyd Meek. And last year he took a mark. And then he did something wrong, and I yelled out in commentary, "Lloyd Meek!" And my Twitter blew up with entourage fans who had got the sneaky little bit I put in there. So yeah. The lexicon of that show is worldwide. It really is.
It is worldwide, but I will say, for whatever reason, I really believe it landed in Australia and connected the most. Because really? In the States, when I hear an Australian accent, I know that it's going to be like friendly fire. You know, it's like there's going to be love there. And I'm not just saying that. They really, you know, the national pastime is taking the piss. And that's really what Ari, you know, that's what he's all about. And, you know, this will be disappointing to you and probably all your listeners that I'm not Ari Gold. And I'm a stage actor from Chicago that, you know, was thrilled to play this character. But, you know, do I spend my time berating people and screaming at them? And, you know, I would probably be in prison or just not allowed to work at this point. You know what I mean? That's the climate that we're in, you know? So, and it used to bother me, to be honest with you, just because I have done, you know, 80 movies and worked my whole life and done things that I'm very proud of. And then when, you know, people just see you as Ari, you know, that in this country and in the UK, they really get that as an actor, you need to do these rites of passage. You need to work your ass off. You need to go to drama school. You need to come, you know, about it honestly. And then there are other people that think, okay, it's just a documentary. You're just, I just am a lunatic, you know. And you know, there was a guy at a party one time who was speaking to me as if I was an agent that could represent him, you know? And I started having an out of body experience. Like I was on mushrooms. I was like, brother, you know that I'm not an actual agent. I'm just an actor. Like he wanted me to represent him. It's like, brother, you can't be this stupid. You can't. You understand the difference between a documentary and a work of fiction.
I love it. I love it. Melbourne, you're here on the weekend. I was privileged enough to be at the Grand Prix, one of my favourite sports. You were out there on the grid in Melbourne. It was a magnificent day. It was a record crowd. How was your experience at the Australian Grand Prix, Jeremy?
It was amazing. I mean, it's also a testament to you guys. Like, I'm not just saying this. You guys are like, you know how to do it. You can gather in large groups and still be gentlemen. You know, I don't know what it's like once you start, you know, you've had a few drinks, you know, because, you know, it probably gets a little sloppy, but people were just, you know, they were just so kind. And, you know, again, we were, you know, walking down that pit row and people were, you know, they were very, very kind. There's nothing but love for me here. I know Lewis Hamilton from the UK. I filmed a show called Mr. Selfridge there for 4 years.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are in at the beginning of something amazing. The very best that London has to offer. We are going to show the world how to make shopping thrilling.
Good morning, Mr. Selfridge.
And he approached me one time and said, listen, my mother is a really big fan of yours. It made me feel incredibly old. And, you know, it was awkward, but I'm a huge fan of his, and he's, you know, a genius and a legend. His story is incredible, unbelievable. And he's a really, really sweet kid. He's 40 years old now, but he would come to the set of Mr. Selfridge and bring his mother, and we would hang out. And, you know, he reminded me of, like, I was lucky enough to talk to Kobe and talk to Michael Jordan because I'm from Chicago, then spent a lot of years in L.A., and Kobe especially was very curious, and Lewis Hamilton's very curious, and they're obsessed with getting better, and Kobe would just ask me in the middle of a game, he would come over to me and just ask me, be like, man, when I see you playing that role on Entourage, you know, it's so believable. It looks like you're angry, man. Really, how do you do that? And I said, man, how do you pop in a 3-pointer with 4 seconds left to go with a billion people watching you? How do you do that? And he just kind of looked at me and the whistle blew and he goes, no, I get it, I get it. And he flew down court. But he wanted to have a conversation with me in the middle of the game to pick my brain. And, you know, it really isn't unlike sports in the way that, like, it's about just getting in there and just doing it so that it's locked into your muscle memory so that when it's time, you're going to be ready.
Back to Jeremy shortly. Coming up on the Artist Series, the world's premier surf filmmaker. Has he got some stories? Mr. Jack McCoy, bang!
First thing I have to say to you is aloha.
And also joining us on the Artist Series, the frontman from the Hunters and Collectors and hugely successful solo artist, Mark Seymour.
People kind of think that if you're a rock star or, you know, you've developed this professional level of doing it, that it's all kind of about glamour and scale and, you know, euphoria and power and everyone, the fans and all that kind of gear. But it's a really basic personal exchange. Like, you do it because you want people to enjoy what you're doing. And that never changes. Hmm. Like, so you walk out there and you there's a genuine emotional exchange with an audience, or you'd hope there was. So you want your shit to be good.
That is Mark Seymour and surf film icon Jack McCoy coming very soon to the Artist Series. Keep an eye out on your feed. Let's get back to Jeremy. So on that sporting analogy, April 2 at the Palais in Melbourne, a wonderful venue. Then April 4 at the State Theatre in Sydney, which is rather posh, by the way, to be playing at the State Theatre. 20 minutes before you go out as a stand-up comedian, mentally, physically, how are you preparing? Are you a bundle of nerves? Are you relaxed? Like, how do you approach going out on stage and having to provide enjoyment for people who are hopefully in the mindset that they want to be entertained and they want to get on board with you?
Yeah. Listen, even if they don't want to get on board with me and they hate me or they paid to watch me fail, I welcome them with open arms because we can't define ourselves by how we're perceived. And I think that's a trap. We're only human. Mm. You know, I grew up, my parents were my acting teachers and from the time I was a child. And You can get a little sidetracked with reviews and you know, how you're seen and all that stuff. And as you evolve, you realize that it's just like, it's not about any of that. And it all comes from you. And the great ones, you look at, you know, I again, I apologize because I'm American, so all my sports analogies will be Americans. But you look at Michael Jordan and, you know, he is, and I would never equate myself with him ever, but he is totally calm and present to the point where he was even closing his eyes and knocking down free throws. And for me, it, you know, like Shakespeare says, this is probably the first time anyone's quoted Shakespeare on your show. But
yeah, probably.
The readiness is all. And it's true. The readiness is all. Are you ready?
So when you walk out on that stage,
yeah.
Are you, you know, you mentioned you've, you know, so many films and characters where you play a character. Are you playing the character of a stand-up comedian, or are you just yourself, Jeremy?
Well, that's an existential question that we could spend a lifetime trying to answer. Are we ourselves right now, or are we playing a character? And you know, that is a whole other conversation.
I'm me. I'm curious. I've got a million questions for you. I'm fascinated by you. So I'm chatting like we would be having a beer in a pub and I met you and I'd fire questions at you. So I'm me.
Well, that's good. And I sense that and I appreciate it. And that's, by the way, that's why people gravitate towards your show and feel comfortable. I think I'm like you in the way that people come up to me and once they spend time with me, they want to tell me their life stories. And it's probably the same with you. And it makes you a really great host because they feel comfortable with you. And with me, before I go on stage, it's very interesting. So my journey is as an actor. I got on stage when I was 8 years old and I've been grinding ever since. I made 40 movies before Entourage. I was ready for my moment. And with stand-up, I'm a late bloomer to it. You know, I've only been touring since 2017, but I'm like, you know, the oldest late bloomer in the game in the way that I started sketch comedy, which is an improv form of comedy with a group in the 90s in Chicago with Chris Farley, you know, back in the day. So I've been doing improvisational comedy and on my feet and rewriting movies and TV stuff and forever, you know. And so I knew that in 2017, when I started stand-up, I knew I needed to do 200 shows a year to get my sea legs. Because I realized very quickly, oh, okay, it doesn't matter that I'm totally comfortable on stage and I can make all you guys laugh when we're not on stage. This is a different beast. I have to grind 5 to 8 shows a week, every week. And then I will be developing those muscles which can do crowd work, which can really write the jokes and the transitions and all that stuff. So by the time I, you know, hit the stage at the Palais Theater on April 2nd, these are really nice transitions, by the way, and they're organic. Or when I reach the State Theater in Sydney and my boy Volkanovski will be there. I like to name drop, don't worry about it. One of the UFC legends who went on Pit Row told me that he's gonna be there with his guys, which I can't wait because he's an absolute legend. I'm excited and I have nerves, and nerves are energy. And as any sportsman can tell you, once you realize and identify those nerves, we put an onus on these nerves as if it's negative, and it's just your body's way of waking you up. And it's that great energy that's surging through you and you breathe, because like anything else, I've bombed on stage and those nerves can get the best of you. And then you have a choice when you're up there, because your body, you want to get off stage. It's humiliating. No one wants to be humiliated in public. It's terrifying. And so your body's going, get off stage, get off stage. But if you can stay in the pocket and breathe and work your way out of it, I'll never forget the first time I bombed. It was the toughest club. I call it a club. It's a shit bar with 3 people in it, and they're all there to see the DJ. And there are a bunch of comics waiting to go on, and you got a little pin spot and you're on a little wooden crate. And you know, this is me 3 straight Emmys and Golden Globes into it, standing on stage with, and I'm not getting anything. And I said, you guys are probably wondering what I'm doing here. And some comic in the back goes, yeah, what the fuck are you doing here, man? And now I'm being heckled by comics. There are three people just checking their phones. You know, this is not a good scenario. And so it was my first lesson in like, okay, you know, it's not going well. How do I dig my way out of this? How can I find the funny in this? And I just started identifying the truth of the situation, which is I'm bombing. I'm being waterboarded. This is pure torture. Admit to it. Okay, well, go deeper with that. Maybe I've never been funny. Maybe I've never been funny in my entire life. So then I started just exploring the idea of never be. And so the more I identified and was self-deprecating, then they started getting on board. I dug my way out, and that was invaluable because the next time I got on stage, I could tell I was that much better because it's like, well, I bombed in the worst situation possible. So this is easier. This is going to be much easier. Okay, you know, so it takes all of those moments. So to get back to your question, I'm nervous. I'm excited. You know, it's an honor. These theaters are beautiful. I mean, let's be honest. I'm hitting the ground running. I've never been to this country before, and I'm starting at the best theaters in the country. Who do I think I am? I need to be punished. I mean, it's almost 3,000 people at the Palais Theater. There's only going to be 11 people there, so it's going to be awkward. But we're going to play through anyway. You know what I mean? I'll just do a lot of, you know, do you have any idea who I think I am?
They'll be packed out, mate. They'll be packed out. I like a good name drop. We've been privileged to have Lewis Hamilton and Alex Volkanovsky on this show. So
I
can relate.
There
to
you
the
go.
You're
there you go.
About. So there's a couple of name drops for you.
I love it. Well, they're both absolute legends.
You're in Adelaide. What, like you're shooting a film at the moment, yeah?
I'm shooting a film. Just to the left of me are my lines that I'm just grinding into my head. It's funny because, you know, I wish I had a photographic memory. If I did, it would make things much easier. But I have to just kind of run the lines like a play and and I'll grab anyone. You know, I do lines with my mom. Wait, no, I don't do lines. I run lines. Don't do lines. Don't please, kids at home, do not do cocaine with your mother. It gets very awkward.
So with your lines there, I know this hasn't been out. Can you roll a couple on me, or is it top secret because it's never been to air, so we can't say any of it?
It's top secret, but like, you know, I have this interesting curse where like, because I've been able to handle a lot of dialogue and make it feel improvisational, it's like the harder you work, the easier it looks. You know, I would do 4-page monologues in Entourage and people think that I was making it up, and it was word for word.
Everybody stop. I didn't go to the Lakers game because they were playing the fucking Bobcats. And I came here today because I thought this was a session on how my wife could learn to communicate, how to answer a question without a question. Basic humanity 101, which I thought, given your wall of fucking diplomas, you could easily fix. Or if you couldn't, you could give her a pill that could either fix it or make her a mute. But now, to turn around and gang up on me, I have work to do. I have hundreds of clients to deal with. And just so we're clear, I don't care about any of them. They're all just a number, like wife number one and therapist number seven. Good day.
There was someone on set, literally, and her only job was to make sure that I was word perfect. She would just sit there. So those monologues, and if they weren't word perfect, I'd have to go again. You know, but that's your job. So I just run them, run them until by the time I get to set, you know, it's, I'm totally present. You own the lines and then you can do and perform improvisationally, yet it's word for word, if that makes sense.
The monologue, you know, obviously there was some amazing monologues in Entourage.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Malibu, it's a beach house, and
yes.
Is it Josh Weinstein, the other agent, and like there's a tracking, like it's cinema, like beautifully shot, and then you're just, I don't know how many pages that was, but if you had to say to me one thing from Entourage that I recall, it's how beautiful that shot was and how you just kept going and going and going. Like that's, I don't know, I can only say as a punter watching at home, like that was just a wonderful thing to watch. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about or you have pride in that particular moment, but that was your top shelf gear.
Not only do I remember it, but thank you for mentioning that, because that scene was the breakthrough moment for Ari Gold. Because you have to understand, that was season one, episode seven.
He used to make the best hazelnut latte. He was like a chemist in there working, just like mommy made.
Hey, man.
It was fantastic.
He's up, man. It's a freaking party.
Does your boss know that you're using his house? Because I put a call into him. He and I went to school together. I helped him cheat on his economics final. That's how he got his degree. He owes me big time.
You call my boss?
Absolutely. You know what other class I took at Harvard? Business ethics. I don't steal other people's motherfucking clients. But in your case, I'm going to make an exception. I'm going to take everyone. Your B-level sitcom stars, your reality TV writers. When I'm done with you, you're going to be repping Sideshow Freaks. You need JoJo the dog-faced bitch boy? Call Josh Weinfuck, the lightweight pen-stealing fuckface. Now where's my boy Vinny Chase?
And I'll never forget it, because the reality is I was hired as kind of an afterthought to Entourage. My character was, you know, I ended up signing a contract because that was not really a series regular contract. It had one scene in the pilot, and I knew Mark Wahlberg, and I knew Ari Emanuel, his agent. And so Ari was my agent. So I knew exactly how to play this guy. And it was very specific. There's a drama turtle E. They're all those people exist. They are Mark's entourage. And I was like, wait a minute. People are going to be fascinated with the backstage life of Hollywood. These are very specific characters. This HBO is the best game in town. They've got The Sopranos and Sex and the City. I got to do this. And so I turned down leads and things to do a tiny role, because I knew, okay, this character is fascinating. You know, Ari Emanuel is one of these guys who is, you know, is a type A, over the top, aggressive, abrasive person who is monogamous with his wife and is a great agent, but you think he's a pig. I'm like, wow, that duality, if I could play that guy, if I could just be crushing people, he's an equal opportunity offender. I stole one of his lines and put it in the show. An actor came up to him and said, Ari, I haven't heard from you in months. You're my agent. What's going on? He goes, I represent talent, not temperature. And you're not fucking hot. So why would I call you? Let's get out of here. You know, like, and I was like, oh my God, that's fucking brutal. I represent temperature, not talent. And you're not hot. I was like, oh my God, that is crazy. Because the reality is, you know, in sports or in acting, you're not always hot. You know, and if you're hardworking and you got a good work ethic, you know, you got to stick by those people, because we're going to, you know, it's going to ebb and flow, you know. So thank you for mentioning that. That particular shot in Malibu was the breakthrough moment for Ari Gold. And it was a Steadicam shot. It was an homage to Scorsese and all that stuff. And it's one long, massive monologue where I'm looking for Josh Weinstein. You know, and I finally, I keep going through the entire house and I land, you know, on my mark, and I have to deliver the entire monologue and all in one take. And, you know, that's what we live for. We live for those moments. And I was ready for that. And that was a breakthrough moment. And that's when they looked at that and went, oh, okay, we have to expand this role. And that's when everything changed. Because before that, if you look at the show, I would have one scene per episode, you know, and so that was the breakthrough moment. And again, that, like I said to you, Aussies have good taste. They pinpoint things like that. No Americans ever brought that up. I think I got to go where I'm loved. I think I'm just going to get a little condo in Adelaide and maybe just open up, some sort of a yogurt shop and never to be heard from again.
That is the end of Jeremy Piven part A. See you for part B.